This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Baby, I'm home. Well, thank you so much, Parker. I'm Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. Today's guest has been involved in music on many levels for years. And many times, if the recording artist doesn't take time to specifically talk about them in interviews and such, you might never know that they had a part in a particular song. Larry McRae's new album, Heartbreak City, and his critically acclaimed 2022 album, Blues Without You, included the work of our guest today. In fact, he has worked with Larry on a few projects, but Larry's not the only artist that he's worked with. So without any further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest and get the story straight for him, shall we? Charlie Walmsley, welcome to Time Signatures. How are you, sir?
I am doing just fine, and I'm pleased to be here today, Irv. It's a pleasure to meet you. If this is considered meeting, I'm happy to be here.
Likewise, yes, sir. And let me just point out for the record that Larry has talked about you several times. I've heard several interviews where he's mentioned you, especially on this newest album where you've got credit for a few songs, and we'll get into that in a minute. But before we dive into these cool stories regarding Larry and others, I'd like to talk about you for just a moment. Talk about your earliest memories of music, would you please?
My earliest memories of music would be, and I went to this Catholic grade school and they taught music as part of the curriculum. And then I took piano lessons in fifth grade, and it was my request. I went home and asked my parents if it's okay if I take piano lessons, because they offer them at school. And I took piano lessons for a year, and after 1 year, I was dismissed by my sister. I won't name her name, but I was dismissed by this very nice little nun because I didn't practice the way I was supposed to practice. I guess I was playing too much Ray Charles and not enough Bach. I don't know. But I kept on playing on my own. I messed around with the piano at home. Then when the Beatles came out, everybody was getting, you know, I was 12 years old, and all my friends were into music. I was into music. By the time I was 15, I got a guitar, and it was Bob Dylan. And then I actually played at a few folk clubs when I was 15 or 16. Then I got in bands and, you know, that kind of progression. So,
yeah. Now, as you were coming up, who were the most relevant artists or bands that gave you inspiration as you created your sound as a musician?
Well, when I was coming up, I would say that the most, as far as songwriting, I'd have to say that Bob Dylan is at my very core.
That
Bob Dylan, you know, I pretty much had his first dozen albums for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for about 10 years. You know, I just lived and breathed Bob Dylan.
Okay.
And of course, anyone my age is going to, any musician my age is going to have list the Beatles as influence. I was a huge Beatles fan, you know, and then I was, and then I wasn't because I was too hip for the Beatles. And then they came out with Rubber Soul, and I guess, oh, these guys are pretty hip too, aren't they? So, you know, so, but I've had, you know, in terms of influences, I'd have to say Carole King is a big influence. You know, okay. Carole King is a fabulous songwriter, and she wrote a lot of those great rock and roll and R&B songs that we love from the 60s and 70s. Anybody that loves the blues or writes the blues has to give a bow to Willie Dixon, because he sort of wrote the book on the blues, you know?
Yes.
And then sometimes I will take a particular songwriter and I'll do what I call study them. I'll read their biography. And while I'm reading the biography, if it takes me a month or 6 weeks, I'll listen to the songs intently as we're going along. So I've done that with Leonard Cohen. You know, I'd like to say sometimes he's an influence. He's a little over my head, but I love him. And Joni Mitchell, and I've done that with Jimmy Webb and Doc Pomus, and of course Randy Newman. Now Randy Newman, if I play a song, if I'm at a group of songwriters or musicians, and I play a new song for them on the piano, and piano is my primary instrument, they will always say, "Wow, that's really cool. It sounds like Randy Newman." Now, maybe I was writing the song to sound like Tom Waits or sound like, Bobby Bland, but when I sing it, it's like, "Oh, it sounds like Randy Newman." Now, as much as I love Randy Newman and I've studied him and studied his music, I can't cite him as an influence because Randy Newman is such a specialized writer. No one writes like that. He writes in that third person about the untrustworthy narrator, But Randy Newman is certainly there. And I like those behind the scenes guys, like Jimmy Webb, Doc Pomus, Otis Blackwell, the guys who write the songs and we never hear their names, but they're really cool songs.
I love that answer. And there's so much. It's like an onion. There's so many layers to it. But Charlie, at what point in your life did you realize that music was absolutely going to play an important role in your future?
I believe when I was a teenager, I said, I am either going to be a musician and that's it, or else I'm just going to be a bum. Now, I didn't quite make it that way. I actually, I lived a con I worked and I had a day job and a career and a couple different careers, but never throughout my life did I ever was I ever not involved in music. I don't believe I ever went 6 months without playing a gig. And then, in my interest, my ambition and energy around music and songwriting has gone in waves. I've gone like in the 90s, I was playing keyboards with Larry's band part of the time, and I was writing a lot and sending out cassette tapes to anyone who would listen, trying to pitch songs. And then the last 10 or 12 years, I've really hit the songwriting really hard. I've really, really worked hard at it. And it songwriting has been there since, has always been there with different levels of energy. So music has always been
Okay.
there. And I'm old and retired, so I don't have anything else pressing me.
So you can enjoy it any way you want, right?
Right.
All right. According to Bruce Iglauer, founder and owner of Alligator Records, you are clearly a songwriter. That's a direct quote. And one of my good friends, Cherie Williams, the princess of rock and roll gospel blues, stated, "He is the blackest white man I know." Talk about high praise, man. How does that make you feel to hear that?
Well, that Cherie Williams said that at Buddy Guy's. I was
Okay.
playing keyboard with their band, the Wise Guys, and we were in between tunes, and or maybe I played some little solo on the piano, and Cherie said, "He's the blackest white man I know." And so years later, I said, "Cherie, remember when you said that? Can I put that on my, can I use that quote?" Yeah, it feels great. And Bruce Iglauer, I don't know Bruce well, but he has been very, very generous with his time and his comments with me.
Yes.
I remember I said in the 90s I was sending out cassette tapes to anyone who would listen. Well, Bruce Iglauer always listened. He always listened to my music. He would send me back a letter critiquing each song. He would say,
Nice.
"I'm going to save this one and this one and these two, probably not." So I'd always send him three or four songs so he'd have at least one to reject. But he would always save songs and he'd say, "I hope we can do a deal someday. It might never happen, but I hope one of my artists records your songs." And it has not happened yet. But the coolest part of meeting Bruce Iglauer, when I first met him at the Chicago Blues Festival in the mid 90s, I introduced myself to him and I had been sending tapes to him. I introduced myself to him and he pointed at me and he said, "Those are the telltale signs." So he actually sang my song to me when I
Wow.
introduced myself. So that felt he's a he is from my estimation, a great guy.
Well, and it gives you a little added appreciation when he's listening to your music when he's singing the song back to you. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, all right. Well, listen, as I was gathering some intel from your website in preparation for today's chat, and look at you, man, opening for the likes of Bobby Blue Bland, Johnny Taylor, Ronnie Baker Brooks, Shirley King, just to name a few. And then there's the bands that you've worked with. Among those, the McRae Brothers, obviously, Cherie Williams and the Wise Guys, the Larry McRae Band, and the Draytons, among others. Any great stories from those experiences through the years?
Well, how much time do you have?
Pick a couple of your favorite stories. I'd love to hear them.
Lots of great stories. And interestingly, those acts that we opened for, Bobby Bland was at a show in Chicago at the DeSable Museum, and that was with Larry McRae Band. And it was, that was a pretty interesting story because it was an uptown sort of a setting. You know, it was Bobby Bland was the headliner, Shirley King, the daughter of the blues, B.B. King's daughter. She opened up. We had the middle slot. Well, we came, and there were two shows. And we came out in our first show, and the entire audience is in suits and fur coats and dressed to the nines.
Wow.
And we played some of Larry's recent material, which was our set. And they liked it. And after we took a break, Larry said, I think with this audience here today, we're just going to go out there and play the blues. So we just went out there and jammed some blues standards, and they, you know, they really, really enjoyed it. Yeah. Yeah. So that was fun.
Yeah. You know, I've actually heard him do that where he walks out and just says, I'm just going to play some blues.
Yeah.
I think he's got a really good way to gauge the audience, of course, with his many years doing what he's done. Any other favorite stories you want to share? You got another one for me?
Let's see. The other was Cherie Williams. Well, Cherie Williams, we played a couple times in Chicago. And they were both. We opened up for an up and coming blues act in Chicago, a really, really great guitar player and singer. We opened up, and Cherie is such a powerful singer. And she had James Owen on guitar, and it was hard for me to keep up in that band because there was so much talent in that band, and Cherie's band was so powerful, and she is so powerful that when the headliner came on, we actually kind of felt kind of bad for them because it was honestly a letdown for the audience after Cherie's act. So I'm not naming any names, but it was interesting that Cherie's act was that powerful that it took all the air out of the room, and there wasn't much happening when the headliner came on.
Wow! Imagine being the headliner that had to come in after her, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's get to it, buddy. Without any further ado. How long ago did you meet Larry McRae, and what caused those stars to align? I mean, you've worked with the McRae brothers, so, you know, and that was a bit ago, but how did that all come together?
Well, it came together very specifically. Okay. I have this very good friend named Sharon Archambault. Sharon Archambault was a very talented vocalist, and she was big in the music scene in Michigan. She never made a record. She always had deals that were going to happen. She was top-notch talent. But she did connect so many people. Larry McRae will tell you that Sharon Archambault connected him with Bobby Hankins that got him his first record deal at Point Blank.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So my friend Sharon Archambault called me up, and this was in the late 80s. Let's say 87 or something like that. She said,
"Man,
having a party at the house in Bay City this weekend. You should bring your piano because we're going to have this really good blues band from Saginaw, the McRae Brothers." Well, I had heard about this really good blues band from Saginaw, these young guys. And I said, well, that sounds fun. Now, I really wanted to make an impression because I would love to play with a really, you know, in 1987, I had a couple bands going, but I would have been happy to join a really good blues band. So I said to Sharon, I said, well, what kind of music do they play? What stuff do they do? She said, well, they play the blues standards and the classics, but right now they do a lot of Robert Cray. I said, okay. So at the time, Robert Cray's Strong Persuader album was on my stereo every day.
Okay.
But when Sharon told me that these guys played a lot of Robert Cray, I sat down with that record and I learned every song, every change, every riff, every stop. And when we jammed, they played about 8 Robert Cray songs and I was right on every change.
Wow.
And 2 days later, I mean, we had a great time. And 2 days later, their sax player, I think it was Danny Lewandowski, called me up and said, hey, that was really fun jamming. You want to play some gigs with us? So that was the McCray Brothers band. And my first gig was at the Michigan Festival in Lansing, where we opened up for the Blue Avenue Delegates and then the Kinsey Report with Big Daddy Kinsey.
Man.
Yeah. And then
that was a hell of a deal, wasn't it?
It was, and I was very excited about that. So, and Larry and I really hit it off. You know, Larry hits it off he's got a lot of friends.
Yes,
and
he does.
We started working together on songs, and you know, he recorded one of my songs in on his House of Blues album, that Keepin' Born to Play the Blues. He recorded my song Sunny Monday, which I had written for him after a tour out east. And we did some other projects together. So it's been a long road with Larry, you know, off and on.
It's funny that you mentioned Sunny Monday, because that was one of the songs that I listened to in preparation for this interview. And I got to tell you, I'm always the type of person that, number one, I like a song that makes me feel. Number two, I like a song that I can align myself with and say, yeah, I get that. And Sunny Monday, man, what a tune. That was, I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to you. It's a great tune. Now, was that the first album that you collaborated as part of with him?
Yes. Yes,
and
it was.
What year?
That came out in 98. Now, we did a one-off project, the Bluegills with special guest Larry McCray.
Yes.
For Atomic Theory Records, but that was a one-off. That wasn't really record Larry McCray album, but
okay,
that's another story. But I wrote, you know, several songs on there. Yeah.
Is it safe to say, and I mean this in a very good way, is it safe to say you've kind of found residency in Larry's head a little bit? You kind of have a feel for the way that he presents himself and projects himself through his music?
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I take that as a compliment, and I do. I mean, Larry is certainly, you know, I don't write every song I write for Larry, but if I write a song for Larry, that song is more important to me than any other song, you know.
Yes, sir.
Other songs. And like Sunny Monday was written for him and about him. We did this little mini tour out east. We played New York and Connecticut and Vermont, and we used to do these little tours, and you'd go out on Wednesday and then you'd be driving home on Sunday. And
okay.
I'm thinking, we're driving home, you know, we're taking turns behind a wheel in a Ford Econoline, and you get home on Sunday, and then Monday you're a musician. So Monday you got money in your pocket and you got the day off. It's going to be Sunny Monday. So that
there you go.
Song was in the line about when I was working days and now the only tools of my trade are my guitar and a map, you know, because that's all he needed. He just needed a map how to get there. And he had his guitar and that's it. He said goodbye to working at the factory. And that was his story.
Yes, sir.
And Arkansas was certainly his story.
Well, and that's where that comment came from when I said that earlier about finding residency in his head, because from that 2022 release Blues Without You, you're credited with writing Arkansas, which really surprised me, and Mr. Easy, which really describes Larry. But I say that it surprised me because Arkansas is such a Larry McCray type of song. What's the backstory with that?
Well, Arkansas was, you know, I familiar with Larry's, life history and all that. And it started, I had a dream. It was in 2014, and I had a dream that I called Larry on the telephone, and he answered the phone. It was a regular telephone, and he was on the stairway down to his basement at his old house on Weber Street in Saginaw. Okay. And he said, "Hey, Charlie, I'm in the middle of a rehearsal." I said, "Oh, I'll call you back." He said, "No, that's okay." And he started singing, "I was born in Arkansas, feeding hogs and baling straw." And in my dream, I thought, damn, I wish I had written that song. And then I woke up startled and grabbed a yellow pad and started writing down lyrics.
Wow. And so, how long did it take for that song to come together?
Well, like I said, I had that first inspiration in 2014. And then I did, my little rough demo of it. And I sent it to Larry. And he said, yeah, he thought it was pretty good. And then I arranged a demo session. I arranged a session in Grand Rapids with Michael Crittenden to bring Larry and his brother Steve on drums in and demo some of my songs. So we went in and we recorded three of my songs, and one of them was Arkansas. But when we got in the studio, Larry heard Arkansas much differently than I did. He wanted to give it more of a Bo Diddley kind of feel. And he changed the structure, so we had to come up with more lyrics. So I brought in my original Arkansas and my original lyrics, which are most of the lyrics that are in there. But Larry totally grabbed a hold of it and changed it all around. And we rewrote it in the studio. And then he made that 2015 demo of it. And then, it just, nothing really happened. And then in 2021, he called me and said, "Hey," or he left me a voicemail. Said, "I'm at my house with Joe Bonamassa, and I want the lyrics to Arkansas. Can you email them to me?"
What a call, man. What a call.
Yeah, I'll get them right out. So
here, let me drive them down to you.
Yeah, right. And then, and those guys, Josh Smith had a big hand in rearranging the music of that song. Josh is a great, he's a great producer and arranger. So all those changes before the music in that song wasn't me. Well, most of the songs are right. The music is mine, or mostly mine. But that one, just the lyric is mine. And then Larry took it, and then Josh took it from there. And it turned out pretty good.
But I love the collaboration. I really do. And honest to God, man, anybody that knows Larry knows that Arkansas is pure Larry McRae. I mean, there's no doubt. Every little bit of that, every lick, every vibe, everything about that song. And again, I'm not just saying that because you're here with me now, but I really enjoy the backstories. And speaking of those, the backstories of two of the three songs that you collaborated with for Larry on his newest album, Heartbreak City, could you please share the story with us about Bye Bye Blues?
Oh, yes, sure. Bye Bye Blues was it was more work, perspiration than inspiration. Bye Bye Blues, my wife and I were down in Florida staying in a cabin on the Suwannee River, and Larry had told me that he was compiling songs for a proposed new project with KTBA Records. So I was pitching in the old songs, but I said, I got to have something new. And I told myself, forget about the sentiment, forget about the lyrics, just find a groove. Just find a groove and start from there. And for 3 or 4 days, I'm doing this, and I'm listening to old soul music, and I'm listening to this, and I'm trying to find a groove. And I woke up one morning with this do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- town, which was 15 miles away, for coffee and milk or something. Drove to town. By the time I came back, I had three verses and a chorus.
Wow.
Sat down at the piano. I'm telling Melinda, said, I got a new hit song for Larry. You got to hear this. And I'm singing the song. And I, you know, if most songwriters would tell you if there's something really rushing through them, it's very emotional and it'll make you cry. So I'm playing this song and I'm crying because all this stuff that's coming through me. And she's looking at me like I'm crazy. And then I made a demo of it. I made a real simple demo on my iPhone voice memo. And I sent it to Larry and Peggy. And I said, the subject line was our next big hit. So and this was January of 2024.
Wow.
So it is just, it's amazing that from January 2024 to have that idea, and then April of 2025, it's released. But it went from there, it went to, you know, most of the songs that Larry has recorded of mine, we have done in a demo setting somewhere.
Okay.
Like that song, Mr. Easy, from the last record.
Yep.
We did a demo of that in 1997 or 1998.
Oh, wow.
And Larry would perform once in a while at his gigs, but he never recorded it until then. And Try to Be a Good Man, that the opening track in this album, that
yes,
was
sir.
From a demo session around the same time, late 90s. So
wow.
We went into the recordings. We went into Andy Reid's recording studio, and we recorded the basic Bye Bye Blues, and then passed it over to Scott Baker's studio, where Scott Baker and then Steve McRae was in on that. And there were sessions here and sessions there, and somehow we pounded out a demo to pitch to Joe and Josh for the new album. And apparently they liked it. Yeah.
And now I had a digital copy of the album before it was released in preparation, because I interviewed him. And then we released that interview the week that he released his album. And it was an incredibly, number one, it was an incredibly heady time for me, because nobody's ever done that before. That's a lot of trust. By the time that album got released, maybe 5 weeks after I heard it for the first time, I had a list of favorites on that album. And one of them, which really surprised Larry and Peggy, was Hangman. And before you start on the story, I want to tell you that despite the dark nature of the song, it's one of my favorites on the album. And I think it's mostly related to the chorus and the beat. That's what caught me first. But I would love to hear the backstory on that one as well.
Well, Hangman is pretty interesting.
It is.
In 2020, I'm glad you like it. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I think it's a pretty interesting song. In 2020, during the lockdown here, I had carpal tunnel syndrome and cubital tunnel syndrome. And so that was a good time for it, because all my gigs were canceled. So I couldn't really do anything with my right hand. And I was part of a Facebook songwriters group that Andy Baker runs called Songsmiths.
Okay.
Once a month, you write a song based on a prompt, you make a video of yourself playing that song, and you send it in, everyone critiques it. Well, my song prompt was Rope, okay, for the month, whatever month that was, when I couldn't play anything. My song prompt was Rope, and every morning when I get on the exercise bike, or most mornings, not every morning, the first song I listen to, and I still, years later, I still do, is Tom Waits' Get Behind a Mule. Well, there's a line in Tom Waits, because, you know, I'm on the exercise bike and Tom Waits is saying, got to get behind a mule in the morning and plow. Well, there's a line in there, I'm digging all the way to China with a silver spoon while the hangman fumbles with a noose. The hangman fumbles with a noose. So when my prompt was Rope, immediately went to Hangman. And then I worked out three verses and the chorus as it is right now. And I would, you know, I did it on one string on the guitar. That was the thing. That's why it's like it is, because I couldn't play anything. So I just played E string on the guitar, and I thumped the guitar like a drum, and I chanted out this song. So in 2024, I went into Andy Reid's studio in Bay City, intent on making some nice acoustic demos on some of my folkier stuff. Because I like to have, you know, I'm not good at making home demos. So I wanted to have some nice demos of this folkier stuff. Well, Larry McRae, I told him I was going into the session. He said, hey, I'm not doing anything. I'll bring my acoustic guitar and help you out. I said, great, come on. So
what a guy.
We first recorded one called Liquor Lake, which has never been released, but it's on my YouTube channel, Liquor Lake. And and then I started on Hangman. And we started on Hangman, and Larry said, wait a minute. You got to sing it like this. Get up there high. Sing it. Do this. Okay. And we tried it again, and then he started singing it. And then Larry grabbed a hold of the song. And when Larry grabbed a hold of that song and started singing it, I was just totally thrilled. I never imagined pitching that song to Larry because it's an unusual song, you know. And he grabbed a hold of it. Then he said, we need to get my brother Steve in here on drums. And so we did another session. We got Steve on drums, and we put down the rhythm track, and then they took it over to Scott Baker's and worked on it there. And then Larry added a bridge that first day in the session. Larry added that four chord bridge where it goes, life don't come with instructions. That's Larry's part. He added that. Okay. And then he also added the alternate chorus, angels fly in heaven, birds fly over the earth. That's Larry. We took it to Scott Baker's, and Larry wanted to change the direction of the song. Because originally the song was, the last verse was about placing the blame for all these troubles at the greed of Big Pharma. There was a verse about rich men sitting around a table talking about the profits, and they don't care where, you know, which is not there now. So Larry and Scott wrote a verse that changed the direction, and that verse inspired me to write the verse about young man driving through the neighborhood with a beat up rusty van, and please don't take my life. Totally changed the direction of the song. So we got this song with three choruses and an alternate chorus and a bridge and five verses. It's pushing 8.5 minutes. You know?
It's another Bohemian Rhapsody, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. So what are they going to do with it? Who knows? But Larry pitched it to Joe and Josh, and I got a call from Peggy on the day when they first got into the studio there at Sunset Sound Studios in Los Angeles. Wow. And she said, those guys want the whole lyric, not just the edited one. Cause we cut a bunch of stuff out.
Right.
And she said, they want the whole lyric. So then Joe and Josh went through and picked out which words, which lyrics they would use, and did a really simple straight ahead. And version. And wow, I'm thrilled.
I love that story, and reading it just isn't as much fun as hearing it. I'm sorry. So thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. Charlie, looking back over your collaborations with Larry through the years, he clearly has a level of trust for you in that area. How does it make you feel knowing the depth of the relationship that you've built together with him?
Oh, I'm just blessed. You know, I'm blessed to have a relationship with such a huge talent. You know, I'm a songwriter first, and to have someone like Larry that will listen to your songs and do your songs, it's a dream come true. It really is. Like I said, for someone in January of 2024 to come up with an idea for a song called Bye Bye Blues, and not even a year and a half later, and it's out there, and there's 80,000 views on the video, you know, it's like, that doesn't happen. You know, that doesn't happen.
And Bye Bye Blues is such a fun song. There's nothing dark about it. There's nothing edgy about it. It's just a feel good song. And I catch myself singing along to it when I'm going down the road, man. I love
good.
It.
Good.
So, all right. Yeah. We are wrapping this thing up. Where can people go to find out more about you? Maybe buy some of your music if you have them on CDs available, or maybe talk to you about collaborating on a song or something since you've established this impressive pedigree.
Well, I have a website, which is just charliewalmsley.com. And from there, I get messages. There's an email, little email box. You can send me a message from there. You can, I play with a band called Crazy Chester, Chester. You can find them on Facebook, and we're playing at the Wheatland Festival this September, and we play a few gigs here and there. It's a pretty interesting band, And I also played with Jive at Five, which is like a tradition, right? They've been together for over 30 years. I've been with them
Wow.
for 11 or 12 years, and we play
Okay.
at music festivals with like a swing jazz band. Yeah, so.
Very cool. Well, Charlie Walmsley, I want to thank you for taking time to chat with me today on Time Signatures. I truly hope that you and I get a chance to meet up someday when I'm visiting Bay City. I always try to stop in to catch Larry and grab either bring pizza out there to his house, or we go to the Oasis and have perch. But it would be
Oh
an
yeah.
honor to meet you. It would definitely be an honor.
Well, it's been really fun, Irv. I really enjoyed today, and I'll look forward to meeting you. I know we'll meet sometime in the next several months.
We will never be in the same space and not meet. I'll make sure of that because I'll ask Larry and Peggy if you're going to be there, and look forward to meeting you in person, definitely.
All right.
And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my esteemed thanks and appreciation to our guest, Charlie Walmsley, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.